Welcome to the Integrative Ideas in Nutrition podcast. This podcast is produced by the Committee of Inclusion, Diversity, Equity, and Access through the Dietitians in Integrative and Functional Medicine Practice Group with the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Join us to explore a range of whole food therapies and mind-body modalities within different settings and cultures, and to celebrate the ways that our diversity in practice and perspective makes us stronger. Please keep in mind that the information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only. I am Sarah Thompson-Fajera, registered dietitian, integrative and functional nutrition certified practitioner, and your host for this podcast. Amber Alexis is a public health nutritionist and U.S.-trained registered dietitian with certifications in integrative and functional nutrition and diabetes management. She holds two Bachelor of Science degrees and graduated with her Master of Science in Public Health in 2020 from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Amber has spent the past 9 years in various capacities, 3+ as an RD, in the study and practice of nutrition for the management of non-communicable diseases, and as the owner of the Cultural Dietitian Limited, has offered virtual client services, consultancies to organizations such as the Pan American Health Organization, and freelance writing and recipe development for companies such as Healthline Nutrition and Medical News Today. When she's not writing, creating content, presenting, or consulting with clients, she enjoys travel, quality family time, and adventurous outdoor activities throughout her Twin Isle home of Trinidad and Tobago. Am I saying that right, Amber?
It's Tobago.
Tobago. Thank you. With her husband and two children. So yay, Amber. We are so excited to dive into this conversation together, aren't we? This will be a lot of
Thank
fun.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah. Okay. So we just want to start right from the beginning. I know we've covered, you know, some of the highlights in your bio, but what has this journey of yours looked like? We want to really get the insider's view developing into the dietitian who you are today.
Thank you. Well, I am from Trinidad and Tobago, and I still reside in Trinidad and Tobago. Hence, in my bio, it said U.S. trained, right? I'm not from the U.S. I don't live there. But I would have begun my nutrition career with my first Bachelor of Science degree. I was admitted to the university. I was going to study biology and agribusiness, agricultural business. And then I always had this interest, but I didn't have that exposure to nutrition before. So I was like, okay, I like food. I was an athlete. I love to eat, but I just didn't know, you know, at one point I wanted to get into medicine. But I'm like, if I get into medicine, I want to do something with food. I don't really like the medical, you know, pharmaceutical aspect of it. And then at career counseling at the university, when I told the advisor my interest, she was like, you know, I think you're going to really like this course or this major, and it was nutritional sciences. So I'm like, yes, this is what I've been looking for all of my life. Like, this is it. So I immediately dropped my agribusiness major, and took up nutritional sciences. So I pursued two majors, a double major, biology and nutritional sciences. Still learning so much more about the field. So I'm like, oh, well, I don't know what's the difference between a nutritionist and a dietitian. I'm just like going to become a nutritionist and I'll, you know, be able to do what I need to do then. Completed my degree, I started working on a research project for food security or food insecurity within the Caribbean. And then later on, I went into the clinical setting as a dietetic technician. And in doing so, working along with the dietitians, you know, seeing and screening patients, inpatients, outpatients, I'm like, you know, I really like speaking with patients. Like, I love education. Although the hospital is not the best for education, but I really love the little snippets that you have with patients and being able to interact with them. So I'm like, you know what? Maybe I need to go back to school and become a dietitian. So I went to a different university, pursued nutrition and dietetics, I got some exemptions. So I didn't have to do the full degree over because there would have been some commonalities between the two. And that degree, that university gave me the exposure to be able to go to different Caribbean islands. So while I'm in Trinidad, I would have been able to go to both public and private institutions here. I went to Grenada for a few weeks. I would have spent some time in Barbados, all in the, you know, experience of clinical food service and community nutrition. So that was fantastic. It also afforded me the opportunity to apply to U.S. schools because the university itself does not conduct the internship, but they do connect us with a university in the U.S. that does. But I'm like, if I'm going to the U.S. to study, I need to get my master's one time because there's no way I'm going to spend this amount of money to go do my internship and then still have to get my master's, right? So I looked at those MS, PH or MPH, RD combined programs. So I would have looked at Loma Linda University, University of Southern California, Berkeley, and then Johns Hopkins. Johns Hopkins had been my dream university. I'm like, I'm going here, I'm going to apply. And I applied and I was accepted. I was like, oh my gosh. So I got through and then I came to the US in 2018, right? Mm. Did my program. It was fantastic. But also, I was in Baltimore. Baltimore has a very diverse population that myself being from the Caribbean, that I was able to really resonate with, you know, other immigrants who might have been Caribbean or, you know, of different cultures. Because in Trinidad, we call it a multinational state. So we have persons of African influence, Indian influence. We have a very mixed fusion style of food and food culture. So I'm able to connect on various sides when you think about, you know, cultural foodways. It really spans a wide range. So going through my internship, seeing, you know, some of the challenges that some of the patients were having, understanding the cultural competency, the ways that the dietitians would have approached it. But it also became clear to me that our culture, our food cultures really weren't very well understood. And I, you know, felt a little rebellious. I was like, why is it that when we think about healthy eating, it's always from the perspective we have to stop eating these foods that we are familiar with and we have to eat these other foods? And I'm like, but then this couldn't be the only healthy food. So what's happening with, you know, my foods back home? Like, where's the nutrition and, you know, where's the information for that? And it's really lacking. It's limited compared to some of the more popular foods that we would see North American based and European based, right? Mm-hmm. So I felt very passionate about that. The pandemic happened and I ended up staying in the US longer than I planned to. Fortunately, I had a really good student visa sponsor, so they kept extending my visa so that everything was okay.
Nice.
But in doing so, I'm like, I would have sat my board exam during the pandemic. It was stressful, but I got through with a baby. And then I was like, how can I pass the time? So I'm like, looking at social media, getting familiar with, oh my gosh, yeah, dietitian on social media. I didn't know, right? I didn't use social media for that purpose. And then I'm like, what if I did a blog? What if I started a blog just to pass the time while I'm waiting to get repatriated to go home? Because at the time, the borders were closed in Trinidad and Tobago, so I couldn't simply take a plane home. I had to go through a repatriation process. And in waiting, I'm like, let me start just like putting some nutrition information there, make it really simple and, you know, use my degree that I just got, right? And I started a blog. At first, I started it with my name. So Amber Charles, that was my name then. I had since changed it due to marriage. But I was like, it's not resonating. Like, I want when someone sees the name of my page or my blog that they kind of have an idea of what it's about. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, balanced nutrition. And then I was like, oh my gosh, there's so many balanced nutrition things out here. Like, I don't know. Let me keep looking. And then I was like, what about culture? Like, cultural nutrition, this. And I'm like, oh, the cultural dietitian. Like, oh my gosh, the cultural dietitian. It's like, yes, this is it.
That's it.
I search, I'm like, there's nothing there. It's like, yes, this is it. Because I felt so really passionate about highlighting our Caribbean cultural foods in a way that lets us know it's healthy. And this is the way that we can use it, you know, to support our health goals in various ways. And that's how the cultural dietitian was born out of the pandemic. By the time I was repatriated and I returned to Trinidad in 2021, Healthline reached out to me. One of the editors reached out to me. She saw my blog and liked my writing and invited me to write for Healthline. And I did that for a little over 2 years.
Nice.
So that's
Very nice.
That's from beginning to where I now
where you are now.
What that enabled me to do, because during the pandemic, schools were closed, daycares were closed. So when I returned home, although I initially imagined getting into that hospital or clinical setting, I needed to be home with my son. So my husband works, he leaves 2 weeks, and he's going to come back like a month or 2 months later. So we were like, we need some stability in our family.
Yeah.
And writing from home, writing remotely, afforded me that opportunity to stay at home, be present for my son, and still earn an income. And then it led into referrals for, you know, persons who want to, you know, they have different goals, whatever the goals may have been. I'm like, okay, I started off small, like, you know, little general healthy eating clients, and then I eventually worked my way up. And we are on to 3 years now, going into my fourth year of private practice remotely. It's been fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And scary, but fantastic.
Yeah, and what a beautiful example of seeing a need, being open to the possibilities. And it seems like once you thought of that name, it just settled with you. You just knew.
It did.
You just knew.
Like, this is it. This is how I feel. This is really, this is it.
Yeah. And how are you yourself introduced to food and cooking? When did that become a really meaningful part of your lived experience?
I would say from pretty young, because my mom was always cooking, and she would take me to the market, like what we call, or what you would call the farmer's market. We just used to call it the market, and the supermarket was like the grocery store, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she would take me to the market, and she would teach me how to shop, like the lingo, what you're looking for. So I had that early exposure, I would say, like, you know, somewhere around 9 or 10 years old. She would have started taking me to the market with her to learn. So I had that experience. And then cooking at home, like, we always had to help. My mom, when I was 5, she suffered a stroke.
Oh.
So she became disabled as a result. She never had a full recovery from it. And so we became like her right hand. So anytime she needed to cook, we needed to be there too. We would have been like the sous chefs, prepping everything for her. So we would have been in the kitchen, you know, prepping and cutting things up. And then she'll be like, come and see what I'm doing and come and see how I'm cooking. Right. So I had that really early exposure in terms of cooking, seeing certain foods prepared, understanding where the foods are coming from. We had experiences like my uncle used to live countryside. So we would go visit him and like pick fruits from on the trees. I loved going to his going to visit him because he had so many fruit trees, and we would just be able to pick it off the tree and eat it fresh, and that was fantastic. So I had that early exposure. I just didn't have the knowledge that, you know, I felt like there must be something more to food, but I didn't know until much later in life, right? The actual impact that food can have. But cooking, like, every Sunday was a massive meal. So we always had all these different foods, and it was a very full, heavy meal. We call it Sunday lunch, traditional Sunday lunch.
Yep.
So at least once a week, I would have been in the kitchen with my mom experiencing that.
Mm-hmm. What kind of fruit was it on those trees?
Oh my gosh, so guavas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it would have like what we call pomerac, or I think it's like star apple in some places, and we call it star apple, star or rose apple. Okay. And then mangoes and cherries. And he had this, we call it five finger, but it's more star fruit as well. Or carambola.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So those. So yeah. Love.
Did you
and guava is like my favorite.
And did you ever have a good guava the whole time you were in the US? I have to know.
You know, I did, because
you said
I was like, yeah. So there are Caribbean stores there that you can shop and get these food items. But Walmart.
Walmart.
Was it Walmart? I think they have a grocery section.
They do. They do.
And they had guavas. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And we bought. Yeah, so they do. And I was like, this is pretty good. So yeah.
You got lucky.
I didn't have a good one.
You got lucky. Okay. Few. All right. So when you reflect on Caribbean food ways as a whole, you know, like your own experience growing up,
learning about these foods at the market and experiencing these ways of eating, what would you define as the characteristics of traditional Caribbean food ways? And, you know, I want to talk to you about some of the dishes and flavors and things that, that really stand out to you.
One of the characteristics will definitely be peas and beans. We do a lot of those. Like what we call ground provisions or tubers. So we call it dashing, but you may know it as taro, cassava or yucca. We have edibles, or I believe it may be called malanga in some places. So those are like staples to our diet. Mm-hmm. Rice and peas are staples to our, you know, to our diet. A lot of flour-based products, so rotis or flatbreads, fried or roasted or baked, are really staples. So what we had traditionally, we used to have a lot of family meals, mm-hmm. and that particular traditional Sunday lunch. It has since changed, you know, with the growth of eating out and certain restaurants or franchises that are in our communities now, but we would have that Sunday lunch and sit and eat together and have conversations over food more than we would, you know, sit and eat in front of a television. That used to be a really traditional way of connecting as a family. At least in my family, we would sit for lunch, sit and, you know, someone would say a prayer and we'd open, and then we would sit and eat and have conversation. At least once per week, we'd sit and have that type of community. Mm-hmm. Isn't quite like that right now. Things have changed, but that was a traditional part of it. Yeah. But you would find that cooking at home is very important, right? We've only really transitioned to eating out more because of how busy our lifestyles have become and how hectic things are, and you're tired and you're working from morning to night. But cooking at home is very, you know, knowing how to cook and infuse different flavors is really important,
yeah.
because it's one of the ways that we express our hospitality as well. So mm-hmm. when someone comes to your home, you want to be able to offer them food as a way of being accommodating and expressing love and care and concern through food. So it has always been very important.
I can imagine there's a role of culinary nutrition too, and probably how you work with people, right?
Yes. So. Even when you think of spices, you asked about flavors earlier, we love spices. Mm. Not necessarily spicy food, but things and spices. So we love what we call fresh green seasoning. So like cilantro, culantro, I think those are slightly different. Thyme or different types of thyme and green onions, we call them sive. Mm-hmm. Like having those at like the, or like habanero, I know it's very hot, but we have a version of that that we for pimentos, but mm-hmm. it's not as spicy as a habanero.
Yeah.
But then we also have scotch bonnet peppers. So different flavors that we like to incorporate, ginger and garlic and onion and cinnamon, turmeric. Like we use a lot of those in our meals to add mm-hmm. flavor.
Yeah.
So it's an important part of when I'm speaking to my clients as well and saying, well, especially if, you know, maybe we need to be mindful of the amount of sodium intake for any particular reasons, mm-hmm. like, okay, this is how we're gonna flavor our foods without, you know, losing the palatability because we're eating healthier. Mm-hmm. So these are the strategies. These are the foods that we want to, you know, make sure we have at the base of our meals.
Yeah. Are there a couple of specific dishes or recipes that you find yourself kind of going back to over and over that are just really nutrient dense or really significant to you, or delicious? Mm-hmm.
Delicious. I would say we have a meal called pilau, and pilau is a one-pot dish. So it's a mix of rice and peas, and it can be vegetarian. So it could just be rice and peas with pumpkin and carrots or sweet peppers if you want to add them, and different seasonings or herbs and spices. You can add different meats. You can do chicken, you can add beef. I think those are like the two main ones that you may really add if you're adding meat. But it's such a fantastic tip. You know, it could be easy, an easy one-pot meal to have that really adds so much nutrition, so much flavor. And then we tend to eat, like, have it with spices of avocado, or we may do like a cabbage and carrot coleslaw mm-hmm. to go along with it, or just sliced cucumbers and sliced tomatoes on the side to pair with the pilau. So I feel like it's one of those dishes that is very familiar, but also allows persons the opportunity to add more nutrition when you think of adding more fruits and vegetables to go along with it, because it's culturally paired with a fruit or vegetable accordingly, right? So it's a really good opportunity to have those types of discussions with clients. Yeah, so anything peas-based. So we have like roti, and with the roti, we'd use like chickpeas. We call it chana. And that's typically going to be curried. So that's one. Another pea-based one that we have would be split peas. And we make dal from it. But the way that we make dal is different to the traditional Indian dal. You know, so different peas that we use, different preparation. But we have dal that's usually, you know, paired with rice and probably be fish. And then stew lentils will be another one as well. So you find that a lot of pea-based, and there are a lot of vegetarian options if you need it, right? Or you can add the meat in if you need it as well. So I find that the pea-based options and then like the one-pot options are really good for highlighting nutrition. And because we tend to add so many vegetables, so like when we're cooking the stew peas, when you're cooking the pilau, you're adding pumpkin, you're adding carrots, you're adding maybe sweet peppers or bell peppers, you know, different things that you add. So you may not always see that it's paired with like perfect side dish of like a salad, but we do incorporate that nutrition throughout the dish itself.
Right. And so if you were to make a dal dish, is it heavily turmeric based? What kind of spices do you use?
Right. Some people use turmeric, some do not.
Okay.
My dog is barking. But it will be, so we have different types of curries. We may have like a general masala curry, and then there's a curry that you may call goat or duck curry. And then there's a general curry powder. So particularly my husband is very adamant about having all of these different curries in the pot. Jeera or ground cumin that adds, you know, a lot of flavor that we use a technique called chunky, where you would put the garlic with the ground cumin in a spoon or container of oil, and then you like basically essentially fry that, and then you add that to your peas dish, like dal, and it adds a whole element, a new layer of flavor as well. Right? So
yes. Okay.
So you kind sometimes of like turmeric is added. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So turmeric may be added or it may not. It really is just a personal preference.
Oh, I love hearing about that. So you kind of bloom the spices before you put them in, and it just adds that depth probably of flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, that sounds so good. What about, is there a dessert or something sweet? Something sweet that something, you know, kind of works for your patient.
You know what we have? I'll say traditionally, and then other sweet things that I do. So traditionally we have what's called poon. And poon is made from different types of ground provisions or tubers. Most commonly be like cassava or yucca, and it's made into this nice smoothie. You could think of it almost like a pudding or something a little bit more full, like a soft dessert that is very sweet as well. So some people tend to like that sweet provision based dessert, but I tend to go with my fruit. Anytime I'm like, you have a sweet tooth, let's talk about fruit. So one that we may be familiar with in the nutrition world, but it's also very cultural, would be prunes and peanut butter. So that, especially among the Adventist community, because my husband grew up at being Seventh-day Adventist, and he was like, any event that you go to, if it's the wedding, if it's any particular event, you're going to have prunes and peanut butter.
I've never heard that before.
Yes.
Wow.
So that is one that dates, you know, back into our older days. For my clients, you know, I just go on the peanut butter. I'm like heavy on the nut butter. So it's like, let's do some apple and nut butters, or bananas and nut butters, or the prunes or the dates as well, just to add more nutrition, but still appeal to that sweet taste.
Yeah. Okay. So when you're working with your clients or patients, how are you plugging some of these ideas into an approach for them? Because I know you focus really heavily on, of course, the cultural dietitian. So, you know, really culturally informed eating. So what does your process look like? How have you, you know, kind of developed your ability to incorporate some of these foods into your counseling?
Yeah. So I think it's important for me to, in my assessment and my diet history of my clients, really understand what foods they like. So I tend to do food frequency questionnaires with them.
Yeah.
Just for the purpose of understanding what they regularly eat and what they would like, and then figure out, well, how do we make the necessary adjustments depending on what their goals are, right? And what they're doing or not doing. So in the Caribbean, I do have a lot of my clients who love North American or, you know, European-based foods. So I still factor that in as well. I'm not like against any other food. It's just highlighting ours as well.
Sure.
And showing them how we do it. So once I have that understanding of what, you know, you like, you have access to, you're comfortable using, then, you know, I'll say, well, okay, well, this is how we can do it. I do rely on the balance plate method because I think it's just so visually easy for someone, especially someone who's busy, to look and say, well, am I getting, you know, a number of food groups on my plate? Mm-hmm. Is it relatively balanced? And it's a really good nutrition tool for all teaching.
Yeah, sure. It's really practical.
Yes, I use that, but I have modified it as well. Like if it's a one pot dish that we're going to use half and half instead of the quarter and half, you factor it in that way, show them. Like I take lots of pictures of my food. So I always have images to show of practical ways that I would have incorporated mm-hmm. different foods in that way as well.
Yeah.
So you find that I just try to meet my clients where they're at instead of just have a very standard way that I would say, well, this is what you need to do. So once I know what they like, then I am just able to make recommendations accordingly, you know, have certain recipes. I'm not the best at recipes. I need to do more, but, you know, just being able to make suggestions with ways that they can include more of the foods that are accessible to us here
mm-hmm.
without
mm-hmm.
breaking the bank.
Yeah. Well, you're kind of making me wonder, even with all of the meal planning softwares that are out there, I wonder if there's a deficit of some of the
it
things
is.
That are incorporated yeah. that you would want to
know,
include in your conversations. Yeah.
It is, because I still do my meal plans manually. I would love to subscribe to one of the meal planning services, but they don't have the foods. It's not going to be representative. So it's going to work completely against what I would want to do with my clients. So I'm like, maybe I need to build my own, but.
Maybe.
Yeah.
There's a challenge. There's a challenge out there for sure. Yeah, for sure.
There's a challenge.
Yeah.
So that's one of the challenges that I would face as well, is that it's not as easy to be like, oh, well, let me subscribe to certain services that exist mm-hmm. and have my right. clients, you know, on those platforms, because it's not mm-hmm. culturally representative.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I saw that on your, I think it was on your Instagram. I noticed that you were kind of taking different foods and breaking down the nutritional properties as well. So helping to educate people about the nutritional value of foods that, you know, maybe they weren't sure about, you know, whether to include, or maybe they thought they weren't nutritious, or like, what are some of those misconceptions that you're coming across day to day when you're talking with
them? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think one thing that, and that's a really good observation. Thank you.
Yeah.
I have a goal of, I want like my blog to become a library of online nutrition information related mm-hmm. to some of our foods. Because
yeah.
what I would have like my clients say to me is that I've been searching the internet and I'm trying to figure out how to eat healthier, but I get a list of all of these foreign foods and I'm like, and they're trying to figure out, well, what is the equivalent of those locally? Like, what, you know, okay, so they're berries and they say that I need to eat berries, but we don't have the same access to berries. So then what can I use locally instead of berries to get, you know, the same or similar benefit, right? So those are some of the questions that they would have.
Yeah.
And so I've made it my mission to be like, okay, let me, even some of the less popular fruits or foods, let me see how much digging can I dig and what information can I find just to, you know, make sure that it's accessible. So if there are like some seasonal fruits that we have, but the seasons are very short and the research is very limited, but, you know, mm-hmm. we're like, oh, yes, it's a fruit, so it must be healthy. But we're like, don't really know all the time what makes it healthy. Like, what is the nutrition yeah. that's found in there? So I've been working on some of those less popular foods as well to, you know, bring the research forth in easily digestible way
yeah.
that we can just understand what we have here and how it can work for us.
Mm-hmm. And I know here in the US, we have the USDA, the food composition database.
Yeah.
Do you all have anything similar to that? Yeah.
We do not. So what I do is I use Food Data Central because Food Data Central has a really broad database. So I'm able to find most, not all, but most of my foods on there.
Very nice. Good.
And then I would use PubMed for like the scientific research and see what research is ongoing or what has been done. Those are like my two main platforms that I'm going to use to get my information that I'm putting out there. Right? Because sometimes you see a lot of information, but it's unvalidated. It's like, I'm not sure where that information came from. So I try to stick to those sources, resources for that reliable information. But Food Data Central is really good. It has a lot of information, I must say.
Yeah.
I enjoy. Yeah.
Well, that's really fabulous that you've been able to find some of what you're needing there so you can then communicate it. Because, you know, most people don't think of, oh, I'm going to go to the to Food Data Central, right? It's very much
something. It's very technical.
It's very technical. Thank you. It's very technical. Yeah. Yeah. Not fun bedtime reading. So yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. You've been able to harness that. Yeah. And you're reminding me of the work that's been done around the traditional Nordic diet, a similar set of parallels where I think like the Mediterranean diet is so often talked about. But in the Nordic countries, they don't have access to some of those similar foods. So I know it kind of sounds like you're trying to do something similar. You're thinking, where would I find these foods that have enough of the same or similar properties that could then result in similar health benefits from consumption? Yeah. And you're trying to kind of build out those frameworks for people, which you've got your work cut out for you. It
sounds like I do.
With that.
I really
you
do.
Sure do. Yeah.
I do have, as you mentioned, the Mediterranean diet. So I have created a resource for my clients that I call the Caribbean Mediterranean diet.
Oh,
where
nice.
I try to substitute, you know, looking at the active components of some of the foods, particularly like olive oil, the main active, you know, fatty acid in there that's given all of this. It will be the oleic acid, which we find in avocados as well, which is more accessible here than others or olive oil. So just trying to find the comparable exchanges so that I can still use something that's evidence-based and has so much research and find an equivalent for it that, you know, can likely garner the same results, offer the same results without trying to recreate the wheel in that sense.
And leaning on the evidence base that already exists.
Yes.
So for others who are listening to our conversation, who are working with individuals who have food traditions that are different than their own, what recommendations do you have for them? How can they develop a little more awareness and more skills around the culinary piece, the food composition, how to select foods that they're just not familiar with?
I think it's important to have very open dialogue. I know that we are seen as the nutrition experts, and that means that maybe someone is going to come with the expectation that we know it all, but we do. So just being very honest, like, okay, I may have an idea, but your culture is not my culture and I would love to learn more. Can you tell me, how do you prepare this dish? Like, what's the name? What are some of the ingredients? What are the cooking methods? So that you have more open dialogue with your patients, with your clients. And they'll be I'm sure most times they're very willing to share, you know, what that process looks like. And then it helps you now, from your nutritional mind, really think about, okay, food groups, this, that, the other, and really put it together and understand instead of shying away from something that you don't understand and then having that disconnect with your patient or with your client and then just not being able to really get through to them because you're speaking a different food language, as I like to say. But don't be afraid to ask questions. Even for me, sometimes I work with clients of East Indian, Indo-Trinidadian, as we call them. And there are some things that I know growing up because we have those cross cultures, but then there's still certain parts of the culture that I don't fully understand because it's not my immediate culture.
Yeah, right.
So I would ask, okay, so what is this? How is it used? How do you use it in particular? So that I have a greater understanding. I'm not going off of an assumption because of their ethnicity, but I'm allowing this individual to really teach me what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can make recommendations from there. And then what I like to do with them too is ask, is this something like, you know, is this feasible for you? So I do reflective listening. I would have you know, like motivational interviewing and having them help me build out their plans as well. So I allow them the opportunity to say, well, oh, well, maybe I won't do it this way, I'll do it this way. So maybe I won't have oiled planting, but I'll have baked planting, like just having them be an active part of that process as well.
Yeah.
That it's not you just trying to tell them to do something that may be very unfamiliar, but we can get to a common place.
I feel like making changes to what you're eating can be overwhelming and stressful enough. So then if you introduce this other element of more cost and you can't find the things and you don't know how to cook them and you don't know what they taste like, then right? It's like the more layers you add on, the more barriers there are for someone. So what a beautiful set of recommendations that you've given for listening. And anyway, what can we work with that you're okay with?
Yeah.
You know, it's really a beautiful thing. Well, this has been such a lovely conversation. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention?
I would love to mention. So I know before we got into this recording, we had a conversation and you said that when you got into integrative and functional nutrition, you were like, oh, this is what you thought you were going to learn at school. Me too, right? I'm like, I'm going to learn how to use herbs and spices to heal people. And I'm like, this is not what I learned. Like, where is this information, right?
Yeah.
So I had a similar expectation for nutrition school that really didn't meet that mark. But in the Caribbean, we have what's called like bush medicine. And I guess it's the traditional equivalent to integrative and functional nutrition. And it's something that I continue to learn so much more about, just from an evidence-based perspective of how do we, you know, incorporate some of these foods, some of these herbs in a way that's supportive and not harmful, because we know when it comes to herbs, sometimes it just things aren't measured there. There aren't enough standards and regulations around those. But I was really excited to get into my integrative and functional nutrition certificate, and I probably need to do a more advanced version just to dive deeper into this area as well. But it's very fascinating, the impacts that nutrition has on the body.
Yeah, and that whole food is medicine paradigm. I mean, the way that I think of it is, how can we use food to positively shift physiology? And I think that's what we as dietitians, that's what we're all about, right? We wanted to be able to learn how to use food to really nourish. And certainly that does mean that when someone's struggling with their health, how can you incorporate different ways of eating to actually help solve their problem, right? So to me, it's common sense, right? This is of course, right? So I'm so grateful for that emphasis and for the formal training, right, that we have available to us. So and I feel like we never know it all. That's no doubt about that.
No, so we don't.
Learning, and always learning.
I mean, there's always a new trend, right? There's always something to stay on top of.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything else in closing, Amber?
I'm just really honored to be on this podcast. I'm really excited about it. Thank you for the opportunity to really highlight the work that I'm doing and, you know, just spreading a message of that cultural awareness within the field of nutrition, because we will, as dietitians, continue to engage with persons who are from cultures different than our own.
Yeah.
And being able to really support persons and just meet them where they're at. So I appreciate that very much.
Good. All right. Tell people where they can find you.
Yes, you can find me. I have a website. As Sarah said, it's so fantastic. Thank you. but my website is theculturaldietitian.com. And you can find me on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok at The Cultural Dietitian. Yeah, those are my main areas, Facebook, Instagram, and I hop on TikTok at times.
Excellent. Amber's got some beautiful branding going on, so check it out for some for some inspiration. All right, Amber, thank you so much again. Wishing you well. Good luck with all that you're up to. And we'll look forward to staying connected with you.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
You're so welcome. For more information about evidence-based resources in integrative, holistic, and functional medicine, visit the Dietitians in Integrative and Functional Medicine website at integrativerd.org. If you have enjoyed this episode, subscribe in your favorite podcast app to continue learning about diversity in nutrition practice and perspectives.